with the investigation, the special counsel's interview with Joe Biden had been scheduled for weeks. Robert Hur is the second special counsel appointed to oversee an investigation into sensitive documents after Jack Smith was tapped to take over the probe into former President Donald Trump's handling of sensitive government documents. Attorney General Merrick Garland appointed Robert Hur just hours after the White House confirmed the discovery of a second set of documents in a garage at Joe Biden's Delaware residence. Merrick Garland said the government first learned about the initial group of documents that were found in an office that Mr. Biden used upon leaving the vice presidency last November, and the FBI began an assessment of potential mishandling of classified information just several days later. Attorney General Merrick Garland revealed the documents in Joe Biden's garage were subsequently discovered on 20th of December. A spokesperson for the president's personal attorney, Bob Bauer, has declined to comment. NBC News has also covered the same story and tells us more. President Joe Biden was interviewed as part of the investigation into his handling of classified documents being led by special counsel Robert Hur, the White House has confirmed. A person familiar with the matter said Robert Hur personally led the interview. In a statement on Monday night, 9th of October, White House spokesman Ian Sam said the voluntary interview was conducted over 2 days, and Sunday 8th and Monday 9th of October. As we have said from the beginning, the President and the White House are cooperating with this investigation, and, as it has been appropriate, we have provided relevant updates publicly, being as transparent as we can, consistent with protecting and preserving the integrity of the investigation. A person familiar with the matter said the interview was scheduled several weeks ago. When asked about his plans to sit for an interview in the investigation as he was visiting Lake Tahoe in August, Joe Biden told reporters, "There is no such request and no such interest." A spokesperson for Robert Hur and Joe Biden's personal attorney, Bob Bauer, declined to comment. The interview raises the possibility that the special counsel's investigation may be nearing its end, nearly 9 months after Attorney General Merrick Garland appointed Robert Hur to oversee a probe into Biden's handling of classified documents. The White House said in January that documents with classified markings were uncovered at Joe Biden's Delaware home and at Washington office he used after he was vice president. Robert Hur was the U.S. attorney for Maryland during the Trump administration. NBC News has reported that Biden and Hur had been in negotiations over the terms of an interview, including details about the interview's timing and location, as well as the scope of the questions, two people familiar with the matter confirmed in August. Joe Biden's classified documents case has unfolded as his predecessor, former President Donald Trump, faces charges that he mishandled documents, including allegations that he told a property manager at his Mar-a-Lago residence in Florida to delete security video. During his presidential campaign, Donald Trump has sought to liken his handling of documents to Joe Biden's. Biden's aides have pushed back against the comparison, saying Biden promptly returned all the classified documents to the government when they were discovered in his office and then voluntarily allowed federal authorities to search his properties for additional materials. CNN Cable News Network has also covered the same story and tells us more. President Joe Biden over the last 2 days participated in a voluntary interview with special counsel Robert Hur as part of his classified documents investigation the White House confirmed on Monday, 9th of October. The president has been interviewed as part of the investigation being led by Special Counsel Robert Hur, White House Counsel's Office spokesperson Ian Sams wrote in a statement on Monday. The voluntary interview was conducted at the White House over 2 days, Sunday 8th and Monday 9th of October, and the interview concluded on Monday. As we have said from the beginning, the president and the White House are cooperating with this investigation, and as it has been appropriate, we have provided relevant updates publicly, being as transparent as we can, consistent with protecting and preserving the integrity of the investigation. Ian Sams referred additional questions to the Justice Department.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, let there be light, and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, the host of this program. And my guest speakers, as always, Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah. Brother Yasser, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Always a pleasure being with you, Brother Muhammad.
The pleasure is all mine. Sayyid Abdullah, greetings to you too. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Well, it's from two episodes ago that we were criticizing the movie Victoria and Abdul, produced in 2017, directed by Stephen Frears, featuring stars from Hollywood like Judy Dench and Ali Fazal, to just name a few. Of course, we haven't come to the end of the criticism, so we have to actually pick up where we left off and continue along the same line of criticism or the critical review of such a movie. But before that, let's take a listen to a short part of the movie Victoria and Abdul, directed by Stephen Frears, and then we'll be back with his questions. So don't go away.
Lady Churchill was absolutely scandalized, sitting next to a servant and a Hindu to boot.
The Munshi is a Muslim scholar and knows the Quran off by heart. And for your information, he's a servant no longer. He's to be given a staff of his own.
What do you mean, a staff?
The little fat one.
Oh, this is absurd. Letters, invitations to supper. You're treating him like a member of the family.
No, I like Abdul. Lady Churchill had better get used to the fact, as the Munshi is coming on holiday with us, as a member of the household.
You can't take a Muslim to Florence.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, the host of this program, and Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, my guest speakers. You just listened to a part of the movie Victoria and Abdul, produced in 2017, directed by Stephen Frears, which we try to actually criticize. Sayyid Abdullah, I'm talking about this part that Queen's son, Bertie, advises his mother not to sit and mingle with Abdul as a Muslim. Mm-hmm. But the Queen also wants to take him as members of the household to Florence, to a party probably in Florence, why all this hatred against Muslims in the Buckingham Palace?
It is not a surprise why they hate Muslims. I mean, they've been fighting Muslims as far as they can go.
Mm-hmm.
You take it all the way back to the Crusaders. They had this hatred towards the Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Their number one enemy back in the day was Islam. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, even talking back way back, like after Islam started and Islam made it to Spain, and then, you know, Islam overtook Europe and stuff like that, and then the British and the, you know, they started fighting back the you know, for the Crusaders and what have you. So that started the hate towards Islam. And then when you had the Ottoman Empire,
mm-hmm.
it didn't make anything any better. And they had hatred towards Muslims. So it is in their blood that they needed to eradicate Islam and Muslims. And mm-hmm. they invaded the Muslim countries. They invaded Iraq. They invaded the Arabian Peninsula. They divided them because the Arabian Peninsula back in the day was just one piece.
Mm-hmm.
And we had no kings and queens. It was just like from Iraq, Syria, Palestine, all the way to Yemen. It was just one piece of land.
Mm-hmm.
The British, they came and they divided into pieces. They cut into pieces because they thought, well, on the long run, we could only control these people if we divide and conquer, which is the Machiavellian
theme, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's from the beginning they had this hatred towards Muslims. And obviously anything that has an Islamic notion to it, it was hated. When it came to the Indians, though, Indians were looked at as a second, not even a second class. They were looked at like servants, just mm-hmm. someone that's a peasant
mm-hmm.
with the real sense of the word.
Yes.
Right? No, so could you imagine that? You look at the queen and she has a peasant with her. He's a Muslim and he's very close to her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, we're not sure. I mean, himself, the king, he burnt all documents that relates to his mom and Abdul Karim. So nothing was left. Oh, he tried as much as he can to eradicate wherever is left. So we're not sure if there was like a romantic relationship involved or not. So to him, it was something very upsetting to see his mother was a Muslim,
yes,
with an Indian, with someone who's low class, someone who has nothing,
mm-hmm.
and yet he is in the palace and then she's treating him as royalty. And it's said that even Abdul Karim himself, he's the one who pushed the idea of knighthood mm-hmm. to the queen.
Yeah.
So he can see that he had influence on her as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she would spend a lot of times with him alone and stuff like that. So that was a worry point for the king.
Yeah.
What if my mother, God forbid, decides to become a Muslim?
Mm.
What if she decides to withdraw from India, for example?
And at the end of the movies, you see what happens to all the documents, all the photos, all the signatures or pieces of documents that were given. Even that small ring, actually, which was given to Abdul, you know, by the queen.
Yeah. So they like I said, so they were trying to eradicate everything because of the hatred that they had towards Islam, towards Muslims.
Didn't know even from the beginning that he was not a Muslim. They thought he was a Hindu or something.
He was, yeah. They thought he was from a Hindustan, as they call it. He was a Hindu. He wasn't even a Muslim. But regardless of whether he's a Muslim or not a Muslim, they had this issue with Indians themselves because India was a colony. India was under their control. India was causing them a lot of trouble, a lot of problems.
Mm.
And they were sucking the life out of India in order to fund their class in Britain.
Yes.
So the last thing they ever wanted is to have Indians in their own homes with the queen herself.
Yes, exactly.
So, but, you know, they yasha'un wallahu yasha.
Okay, thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah. Let's take a short break by listening to another part of the movie Victoria and Abdul, produced in 2017, directed by Stephen Frears. And then we'll be back with his questions, so stay with us.
I think he met his position. I think he was rather alarmed he had such a prominent role in the household.
Well, of course Abdul has a prominent role in the household. He is my munshi.
But he's an Indian, Your Majesty.
I'm aware of that.
Given current sensitivities in the subcontinent, Your Majesty, the Prime Minister was concerned that it might be sending the wrong message.
I should have thought it was a jolly good message.
But he's a Muslim, Your Majesty.
Precisely. We owe them so much, do we not? For their role in the mutiny, for example.
The mutiny, Your Majesty?
Yes, for the help they gave us with the Hindus.
But the mutiny was a Muslim-led revolt, Your Majesty.
You sure?
Of course. The Muslim soldiers revolted when it was rumoured that their rifles were greased with pork fat.
Really?
The Grand Mufti himself put out a fatwa against you personally, Your Majesty, and Muslim soldiers murdered over 2,000 British personnel.
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, with me, Mohammad Jah, the host of this program, and Said Abdullah and Brother Yasir, my guest speakers, in fact, trying to help me actually criticize the movie Victorian Abdul, directed by Stephen Frears, produced in 2017. Brother Yasir, you know, I'm talking about this part of the movie. All the personnel and politicians alike in the palace are trying hard to convince the queen against Abdul by mentioning the mutiny in India involving killing some British soldiers and a fatwa issued by a Muslim scholar against the queen herself. What do we know about the mutiny? The movie or they try to display it as if Muslims started it.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. With regards to the revolt that may have been alluded to in the movie, mm-hmm. It was the Indian Revolt of 1857. And again, it's very unlikely that the Queen had ignorance of what was actually happening. End of the day, reports would have come to her continuously. Mm-hmm. Right? It wouldn't be something that, it just happened out of the blue in some part of the world that she's the Empress of, and she wasn't getting reports. Mm-hmm. Even today, as you would know, that the military services, any service in the United Kingdom is known as Her Majesty's, or right now His Majesty's mm-hmm. Royal Service, or whatever, Royal Army, Royal Navy, yeah. Royal Post Office, whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
Right, so in this instance, like, the mutiny was actually a joint thing between those of India, so the Muslims and the Hindus coming together mm-hmm. to try and get the British out. And it was the last of the Mughal Empire's stance. Mm. So Mughal Empire being obviously a Muslim, sometimes, you know, an Islamic kind of emperor who kind of joined forces with some of those who are Hindu and of the higher. As we know, in India, they have this caste system of Brahmins and then going down. So that, yes. of these came together. So what, again, we must understand, and something we need to tell our dear listeners, that history is always written by the victors.
Yeah.
It's something important to realize.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, history and what happened and what is not happening is something that is very difficult. History is a very cruel subject. A lot is left out. A lot is written by those who see the event in a different way mm. or want to show the event in a different way. It's something also to keep in mind.
Mm. So, for example, I would say that history is usually written by friends and foes.
Friends and foes. So again, you'll have
friends actually praise it yeah. and the foes write it against it.
So, history is one of those things.
Yeah.
So it says, like, you know, 6,000 British soldiers died. It seems like a large amount, but when you compare it to the 800,000 Indians, both Muslim, Hindu, who died as well, it, you know. And the British obviously were victorious in that thing, obviously, because they remained as the colonizers for India for a very long time, until the 40s. Mm-hmm. So this was like 100 years later on still, if this happened in 57. Until the 40s, when the British eventually divided India into India and Pakistan, and apparently left them to their own means. You know, 100 years later on, they still remained, and they were obviously, those who revolted were put to the sword.
Yes,
you know, so it's not something that like in the movie it shows ignorance, but I feel that it's very unlikely mm-hmm. that there was ignorance on this part.
Yes. Okay, thank you very much, Brother Yasir. Let's take a short break by listening to another part of the movie Victorian Abdul, produced in 2017, directed by Stephen Frears, and then we'll be back. Stay with us. Don't go away.
When I was young, I used to long for death. Now, when there is nothing to live for,
I cling to life with every breath. I'm scared, Abdul.
Don't be scared. Listen, little drop. Give yourself up without regret, and in return you will gain the ocean. Give yourself away, and in the great sea you will be secure. Romy.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program. We are still criticizing the movie Victoria and Abdul, directed by Stefan Frears, produced in 2017. Sayyid Abdullah, I want to ask you a question. This is the last question that I would ask of you related to this movie Victoria and Abdul. And this is again related to somehow a very important concept, which is discussed in great length by existential philosophers, that the one that I asked Brother Yasser in the previous program was about the meaninglessness of life. And this one is related to death, that we all have to actually experience sooner or later. I'm talking about that part that the queen is at her deathbed asking for Abdul. She was afraid to die, and Abdul consoles her by quoting Rumi, or Maulavi, the Persian poet, "Listen, little drop, give yourself up without regret, and in return you will gain the ocean. Give yourself away, and in the great sea you will be secure." This piece of poem, said Abdullah, roughly means that don't be scared of death, because it might be better for you on the other side or in the next world. Another important theme in human life that is also reiterated by existential philosophers, as I said earlier, of course, all religions try to somehow brace or prepare humans for death and the other worlds. What do you think?
Death is a part of life. Death is inevitable. We can't avoid it. According to the words of Elon Musk, he said death is essential because if people don't die, the mentalities will live with them too.
Mm.
So in order for us to have a new mentalities, we need new brains. So we need to get rid of the old ones. That's one of the messages of death. So the death itself, like I said, it's a process of life. But everyone, by the time they reach their deathbed, like the queen herself, obviously, their life will flash before them and they can see what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
So she had, especially herself, she had all the rights to be scared, because after all the bloodshed that she caused, and after all the killing that was done under her name, and after all the atrocities committed against mankind under the name of the queen, she has to answer for. So Allahu A'lam what she was witnessing just before her death. Like what kind of, but the way they made it sound as if death, like when he was giving that poem from Rumi, shouldn't be given to a person like the queen.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be given to a person, a normal person like me and you, who has not committed anything towards the humanity, to put them at ease and to make them, you know, go to sleep in peace. But with her, I would tell her, dude, get ready.
Okay, thank you very much, Brother Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, for your nice contribution to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize the movie Victoria and Abdul, directed by Stefan Frears, produced in 2017. Thank you for listening to us with another movie and the criticism of that movie. We bid you farewell. Thank you very much. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
I'm 81 years of age and have almost a billion citizens. I've been in office 62 years, making me the longest serving monarch in history. Have we finished?
Abdul, you will travel to England, to the royal household. You will present the Queen with a ceremonial coin.
Whatever you do, you must not look at Her Majesty.
Thank you.
Food for Thought.
Hello everyone, here is another thought-provoking saying for our guidance from Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Live among people in such a manner that if you die, they weep for you, and if you are alive, they crave for your company.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en. The war on the Gaza Strip.
Part 1.
The sun shone to announce the beginning of a new day. It was the 13th day of the war on the Gaza Strip, on the 20th of July 2014, the 28th of Ramadan, the fasting month for Muslims. Abu Ramadan Yassin and his family were at the sheltering school for those who were displaced from their homes. They got back to their house from the school in Al Zaytun neighborhood, south of Gaza City.
The situation is forced on us. I shall remind you of what I said a while ago. No giving up, no despair, and no devastation. We will say goodbye to our martyrs, build our homes, plant trees in our streets. We will send our martyrs to heaven, whether they are children, old men, or young. We will send them to heaven, then come back to resistance. This is the equation that should be dominant.
Why should you hear or watch the news?
Our families and children are being killed. We should know the news about where they bomb. We should know about the houses and the numbers of martyrs and the children who are dying. Those are our children, hearts, eyes, brothers and families. We should see the fighters who defend us and defend our grace and dignity.
We have been watching TV for 13 days. We watched the massacres, the killing, and the bombardments. They kill children, men, women, and old men. They kill people when they go anywhere, either to pray or buy food.
Do not allow anybody to use this logic to say that we can live peacefully with Zionists. You know what should be done with those who say this, or those who want us to live next to them.
There is no water or power supply. We cannot live like the rest of humans. And there is war, destruction, killed and torn people in the streets. The army bombed the children on the beach and destroyed our houses.
Allah is sufficient for us against the Arab countries that refuse to support the Muslims. They are supporting the Americans and the Israelis. Aren't we Muslims? Allah is sufficient for us.
After the power outage, Omer Ramadan went to the kitchen to figure out a way to prepare breaking the fast meal for the family, despite the severe lack of ingredients.
As for Abu Ramadan, he was out in the market looking for any available ingredients.
I am going to the market to buy some vegetables to break the fast for the children. I hope we find it open.
You know the way there, and people feel afraid of going to their farms and collecting vegetables. Most of the vegetables we have come from the south, and people feel afraid of coming to the Gaza City.
No one went to his land because they feared to be bombed in their lands or houses. The market is closed. The market is closed. There are no vegetables. I don't know what to do. You think you can manage by anything at the house? Okay, goodbye.
I am frying vegetables. I'm making fried potatoes and eggplants to break our fast with them. Today, my husband went to the market and found it closed because of the war. I am preparing food now using what I found in the house.
Abu Ramadan returned home to help his wife prepare the fast-breaking meal.
Arabs are watching us on TV. During that, they are cooking everything. Chicken, sheep, mandi, and other things. But what are we cooking? We are cooking potato and eggplants to break our fast. We are frying them to prepare our breakfast. We are listening to the news of our land, houses and children. We are being destroyed while Arab countries are just watching us and watching series and movies. See how the water supply is. There is no water in the tanks. The water supply is weak and cannot go up to the tanks.
This is how Abu Ramadan and his wife prepare the meal in the house. As for the families that stay at the school, they only have a small electric device they use for cooking.
The Israeli occupation started firing by tanks. We could not sleep that night. Allah is sufficient for us. They killed our neighbors and destroyed the houses on them. What can I say? I'm frying potato in the school. We have high morale and our men and fighters are strong, thank God. If we have the weapons, we will liberate Al-Quds. God willing, we will pray there. The food I'm preparing is fried potato and some salad. Thank God for everything. What shall we do?
My name is Camelia Kohail. My family consists of 5 members, my husband, 3 children and I. We were having breakfast when the area behind the house was hit. After a while, the missile hit the house itself. The kitchen, bedroom and living room were all damaged. Nothing remained in the house. It was all destroyed. The tin fell on my son and he is injured now. He is in pain because of his head. I have no other place to go. So now my children and I are homeless. I hope there will be a ceasefire or something. I have no place to stay at and nobody is helping us. The entire Arab world is just watching us.
Camelia lost her entire house and settled with her children in a sheltering school. As for Abu Ramadan and his family, they have their own 2-story house, ground floor and another upper floor. The house got hit by Israeli occupation drones, which caused huge damage in the upper floor, making it unlivable.
I was breaking the fast with my wife, and after we were done eating, she took away the leftovers and went to wash the dishes. She came back here while I was watching TV. I was watching the news about what was going on in our country and what happened to people.
I was standing near the window when the missile hit the house. With the explosion, I fell on the floor and could not see my daughter or my husband. I did not think I was home, but I thought I was at school, and the stones were falling on us.
We flew off the mattresses, and I was moved from here to there. My daughter fell here. Something like fire entered the house and exploded. It was a missile. I got up looking for my wife and daughter and found them here. My daughter was hidden, injured, and bleeding. We all became wounded.
The ambulance took us. My daughter and I were injured, and shrapnel hit my husband in his back. Look at this. How could we become like this? We should live this life.
What is this?
This is the kitchen. Look at the destruction. And at the bedroom. Look at the furniture.
Here's my bedroom. Look at it. Look at the damage of the closet. The wood is piled and so is the glass. See how the missile hit the neighbor's house and destroyed their glass and their kids. This is unacceptable. This is my bedroom hit and bombed. We had breakfast and said the evening prayers, then wanted to have some rest in our room. The missile hit the place, and look at the glass, and our clothes, and our condition. All our clothes are torn, and so are our sheets. All the furniture is on the floor. Look at the fragments. Look closely, and let the world witness that. All our clothes are torn. Look at my children's suits. What was their fault? What did they do? How can we afford buying new things? Allah is sufficient for us. The girls' clothes are torn too. Winter and summer clothes are all damaged. The closets and the beds are damaged too. If we had remained here for more 10 minutes, we would have been killed. We would have been torn of glass and of the rocket and its fragments. Is that a part of any religion? What did we do? Is that because we demand our rights? Or we demand our homeland? Or we defend our dignity? What was the crime we committed? Why did they come to our land? Why? Look at the missile. What did we do to deserve being hit by this? Is that because we are demanding our rights?
Look at this destruction, the guest room. There is glass, dust, and the missile powder. The decoration of the ceiling fell down. I was going to have a shower and thank God that I didn't have one. Look at the bathroom. Look how it was destroyed, and even the door. There is nothing good in the house. How would we live here? See how the door was broken? It was completely destroyed.
Allah is sufficient for us.
Today's Special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salamu alaikum. You're listening to another episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. We're going to speak about living by the Quran.
قلب ينبض بالقرآن هذا النور شفاء صدور فاض وعطر كل لسان وهنا حلقات الصديق
Today, Friday, 27th of Rabiul Awwal, 1445 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 21st of May, 1402 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 13th of October, 2023 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. This is Chapter Ar-Ra'd, verse 28, which you listen to.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytanir rajim. الذين آمنوا وتطمئن قلوبهم بذكر الله ألا بذكر الله تطمئن القلوب
Those who have believed and whose hearts are assured by the remembrance of Allah, unquestionably, by the remembrance of Allah, hearts are assured.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Those who acknowledge the unity of Allah and accept His attributes and the prophetic mission of His Prophet, peace be upon him and his family, and embrace whatever has been revealed from him, and their hearts are set at rest by the remembrance of Allah, allow Allah to soothe their hearts, reading his blessings and rewards with the thought of him, and his grace and favors, for Allah's promise is decisive, and nothing will soothe the anxious hearts better than his divine truthful promises. To remember Allah does not mean merely paying lip service to him, though it is one of the clear examples of thinking of him. For what counts is thinking of Allah in all circumstances, in particular at the time of committing sin.
رسول الله معلمنا
هذا القرآن يوحدنا لطريق الخير يوجهنا الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا رسول الله معلمنا
We are speaking about living by the Quran. Humanity, having been bound to academics and subjected to the beliefs of those who were misformed, have given way to an emergency of a belief system based on idolatry. At the same time, some religious institutions have placed varying degrees of pressure on people. Thus, the thoughts of men were cast into the darkness. Yet the Holy Quran is the light and clarity that will bring people out of this darkness. The Holy Quran, which addresses nature and the essence of all things in order words life itself, differs in this regard from other books that seem as an addressee from the outer realm. The Quran was able to change the course of history because it is life in and of itself. It is the essence of all things. Muslims throughout history never viewed the Quran as a written book. They felt its presence as though it was a living being.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, welcome to Arab English Radio and another show on how to live according to Al-Quran, a comprehensive Quranic guide for life from Arab English Radio. The Holy Quran outlines a code of ethical conduct that governs various aspects of life, from business transactions to personal relationships. Muslims are urged to uphold these moral principles in all their interactions and decisions. Central to living according to the Quran is the practice of Salat, the practice of Salah, the ritual prayer performed five times a day. These prayers serve as a means of direct communication with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and a source of spiritual nourishment. The Quran highlights the importance of devotion, mindfulness, and humility in worship, encouraging believers to maintain a strong connection with their Creator. The Quran provides guidance on marriage, family, and parenting, stressing the importance of harmonious and loving relationships within the family unit. It outlines the roles and responsibilities of spouses, parents, and children, emphasizing mutual respect, support, and compassion as essential components of family life. Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio.
May this moment last forever in your hearts, a day you'll always remember every part.
Today's a special.
This feeling of love, just let it grow forever through your life. Bring beautiful years of joy between you till the end of time.
A good life. Allah says, whoever acts righteously, whether male or female, should he be faithful, we shall revive him with a good life and pay them with reward by the best of what they used to do. This is one of the promises of Allah that he will definitely fulfill. However, whoever acts righteously in this world, no matter his gender, as long as he or she believes in Allah and Islam, Allah will grant him or her a good life and will reward him or her in this world and the next. We have been witness to many examples of such people. Of course, such people are the happiest people in the world, not because they are rich, but rather because they are content with what Allah has given them in life. That is why the Prophet Muhammad have said,
موعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا
One way to use the Quran to improve our life is to its companions. The Quran will act as an intercessor. Many Sahih hadiths demonstrate that on the day of judgment, The Quran will intervene for its companions. One of the companions of the Prophet says, I hear the Messenger of Allah say, read the Quran, for it will come on the day of resurrection, interceding for its companions.
Rasulullah says, when you recite in your house the Quran, then your house will shine for the people of heaven, like a stars which shine for the people of the earth. أَضَاءَ لِأَهْلِ السَّمَاءِ كَمَا تُضِيءُ نُجُومُ السَّمَاءِ لِأَهْلِ الدُّنْيَا. Also, there is hadith, very famous hadith from Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam. خياركم من تعلم القرآن وعلمه. The best of you are those who learn the Quran and teach the Quran. There is a hadith which says, Mu'min should not be dying except either he is teaching the Quran or learning the Quran. You should be in one of the two conditions. And you know, these go hand in hand. You never stop learning. In another hadith, Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wa sallam said, إن أردتم عيش السعداء وموت الشهداء والنجاة يوم الحسرة والذل يوم الحرور والهدى يوم الظلام. If you want your life be life of those who have sa'ada, those who are fortunate, those who have happiness, felicity, yeah, sa'id. If you want your life be a very happy life, and if you want to die like martyrs, and if you want to be saved on the day of hasra, the day that is the day of regret, why we didn't do well, and if you want shadow on the day of heat, day of judgment, and if you want guidance on the day of misguidance, when people are going astray, if you want guidance, فَدْرُسُ الْقُرْآنِ. The key to reach all these things is to study the Quran. فَإِنَّهُ كَلَامُ الرَّحْمَانِ. This is the word of Allah. وَحِرْزٌ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ. And a protection from Satan. وَالرُّجْحَانٌ فِي الْمِيزَانِ. And also will give you weight on your scale. Because this scale has to go down. مَنْ ثَقُلَّتْ مَوَازِينُ. One of the things that can make your scale, inshallah, heavy is to study the Quran.
Dear brothers and sisters, thank you very much for joining us. That was all for today's special, and we leave you in Allah's protection. Fi amanillah.
A message from the sky, a mercy for mankind. If you lose your way, we'll always be your guide. Far greater than this world, move mountains with its words. Fixed every part of me and put my heart at ease. And Allah knows words heal the soul, most beautiful of miracles. The more you read, the more you feel Allah's love with every beat. Al-Qur'an Nurun wa Bayan. Al-Qur'an Hadiyul Iman.
سلام.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.